Jem Wally, the IMC podcast with Idil Samatar and Leo Dietrich.
And let's not forget Moza Kresna and Leon Ferhara, who consistently work with us to make this happen.
Episode 1, Fulani Artists in Europe, Identity.
The song you just heard is called Buyel, which is a song created by the famous Fulani singer Babamal.
Mm-hmm. Very famous guy.
Yeah, from Senegal. He often sings in Fulani, mm-hmm. in Pular, and it's very important for him to promote his Fulani culture. And speaking of Fulani culture, we have been working on a project where we have been investigating a research question that I would like to read out for you. That is, do Fulani artists in Europe express a sense of common identity? If so, what do they use for expressing their belonging? And that could be social media, organizations, language, etc. And therefore, Leo, I have a question for you, yeah. since you are our Fulani expert.
Go ahead, Idil.
Who are the Fulani people, actually?
Well, actually, that's a question that is not that easy to answer. Fulani are a people in many African states, and they share a common history, a common culture, a codex of behavior called Pulaku. They live in several states, like they're not limited to one specific country. And something besides their language, the Fulfulbe, something very important besides their language, is their history as herders and livestock herders. So they're busy a lot with agriculture. They're shepherds, they take care of cattle, and they're pastoralists, which is also one reason why they are nowadays located and distributed in several African, mainly West and Central African countries.
So they're not a group that lives in one place,
absolutely not.
One nation.
They're quite the opposite.
Yeah, they're known as being scattered,
mm-hmm.
scattered people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I propose that we talk a bit about the history of Fulani people.
What can you tell us about the history of the Fulani people?
Well, the origin of the Fulani people is not that clear, to be honest. There are several theories about it. And I do think for our podcast, actually, it doesn't really matter where they originally come from. For us, it's more important the Islamization and the relation between the Fulani people and Islam. Because compared to other groups in Western Central Africa, Fulani have embraced Islam already very early.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the 11th century, maybe. That's not that sure, but compared to others, they were quite early. And one of their leaders in the 15th century was Askia Muhammad. He was a leader of the Fulani, and he kind of made use of the fact that there was the Songhai Empire, which was already in its decline. And in the face of its decline, Askia Muhammad, as a Fulani leader, made use of that. And so he expanded Fulani territory. And then something else is very important for the modern Fulani identity. There were some jihads that were conducted by Fulani people. I could mention at least four. There was Fouta Djallon in Guinea, there was Fouta Djoro in Senegal, there was the Massina Empire, the Tukula Empire in Mali, and the largest and longest lasting was the Sokoto Caliphate in northern Nigeria. So those empires were always related to Islam and to a specific interpretation of Islam. So we're talking here about Sunni Islam, not Shia or Ibadiya, but Sunni Islam. Yeah. And Maliki Islam. Maybe you have heard about that part.
Like, I've heard of Sunni, but not Maliki.
Okay, Maliki is a madhhab, which is a school of law.
Yeah.
So you got in Sunni Islam, you got four madhahib, plural of madhhab, And in all West Africa, the Maliki school of law is the most dominant one. And it's also Sufi Islam,
yeah,
pretty much, which is interesting because nowadays you got a lot of Salafi influence in some West African states. But Sufi is kind of contradictory to Salafi. So you got all this mixture between like Maliki school of law and then Sufi approach of Islam. And this is kind of the basis of Fulani Islam, but also of the jihad empires in the 18th and 19th century. Even nowadays, many Fulani refer back to those golden days when they had a state, when they had an empire that they controlled, and when they had the feeling that they were the dominant majority in terms of ethnicity and people.
And power, maybe?
And power, yeah. In a specific region.
They reminisce about those days a lot, where they had...
I do think that many of them do, actually, yeah.
So now, where do they live? Where are they situated? Like in countries such as Mali, etc.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. They're still located in West Africa and Central Africa. In Central Africa, we got Nigeria, mainly the northern part of Nigeria, the Muslim part of Nigeria. We got Niger. We got Burkina Faso. We got Mali, especially in the south of Mali. We got Senegal. They're a very huge minority in Senegal. We got in the south of Mauritania, some Fulani, that's for sure. And some other countries in to a lesser degree in Central Africa and West Africa. And there's also a Fulani minority in Sudan.
Oh, it's a very interesting fact.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for that explanation, Leo. We also have a blog post for the listeners to check out. On the blog, you can see the map of where the Fulani people are located. And you can also see fun facts about different names that Fulani people are called,
mm-hmm.
such as Fulani, Pearl, Fulbe.
Mm-hmm.
So I advise the listeners to go check out our blog.
And sure, yeah.
Yeah. Now I would like to ask you about the Fulanis in Europe.
Yeah.
The diaspora.
What's your question?
What can you tell us about the Fulani people in Europe?
Well, there are some. I think Fulani in Europe is a very recent phenomenon because unlike some guest workers, so-called guest workers that came from Spain, Italy, Turkey, and even Morocco, Fulani were not a part of those people. So means actually the majority of the Fulani people who came to Europe started, the vast majority started coming in the 90s, 1990s. So that's a very recent phenomenon. Yeah, what is especially difficult for us to find out where they're actually located in which countries in Europe is that Fulanis in itself live in so many African countries, but there is nothing as a Fulani state.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when you think about European authorities in the respective countries like the Netherlands or Germany, then you could imagine that they will only be able to take the citizenship as an indicator.
Yeah.
But the citizenship doesn't say anything about you being Fulani or not.
True.
Which makes it difficult, actually,
yeah,
to know how many Fulani are there in Europe. And I'd like to mention Trevor Castor here, who's a scientist and did some research on migration mapping with Facebook. So he had a specific approach to find out where Fulani people are settled within Europe in the diaspora, which is he was simply using Facebook back in 2014. And looking for how many people actually stated that Fulani was their language. So he said like 470,000 people worldwide.
That's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. State Fulani or Fulbe, how they call it, as their language. And the next step that he did was he refined the list to specific countries outside of Africa for sure, because he was interested in the diaspora. And therefore, he found out that the biggest Fulani diaspora, based on his research results, like based on Facebook actually, was in France, Belgium, Germany, Canada, US, Italy, and the UK.
Yeah.
And if we leave the US and Canada aside, then we got five European countries.
That's a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
So the trend is they go back to the countries where who formerly colonized them.
Mm-hmm. Partly, yeah. One could say so. Yeah. For instance, I mean, French is a very important language in West Africa, and many people from Senegal and Guinea, also Mauritania, then go to France, actually.
Exactly.
Unlike Nigerians, who prefer going to the UK, because they were colonized by the UK back then, and also speak English.
Exactly.
So yeah,
language
that's...
is a factor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
Choice of move. Since we are focusing about artists, maybe we should talk about them when it comes to Fulanis in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, based on our research, I would say that there are many Fulani artists in Europe who actually live in exile.
Yeah.
So, but for instance, from Senegal or from Mauritania, I was especially focusing on Mauritania. I have a special interest there. And some people were forced, Fulani people were forced to leave their country. And yeah, but of course, some Fulani artists, as Fulani in general, just came voluntarily and
exactly. Just,
I don't know, work here. And we're not forced to leave their countries, which means that we got a mixture within the Fulani population in Europe. We got a mixture of artists who are here voluntarily and artists who are forced to come over.
Exactly. So that is especially the case for the artist that we interviewed, Yero Gainako,
mm-hmm.
who's from Mauritania,
mm-hmm.
who now lives in the Netherlands. But there's also another artist who we will shortly play his music, called Roy Hems, who lives in Belgium, who's also from Mauritania.
Yeah. So enjoy this song.
Yes. We have just listened to the Mauritanian Fulani rapper Roy Hems, who
mm-hmm.
now live in Belgium, as I mentioned previously.
Mm-hmm.
He's an artist in exile, as many artists and activists in Mauritania have to flee due to political oppression, as with the artist that we interviewed, Yero Gainako, who lives now in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
We met Yero a couple of weeks ago at a restaurant / cafe
mm-hmm.
where we had some drinks with him and discussed different topics about him being a Fulani rapper, as well as the situation that happens in Mauritania.
I mean, I've been there as well, so I'd like to know what you think about the atmosphere of the interview.
The atmosphere of the interview was, of course, he mostly spoke in Franglish, a little bit English, but he was mostly comfortable in French, which made the atmosphere, like, we had to really pay attention to what he was saying and dissect his words correctly.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, it was a little bit tense because we didn't know each other, and he was very surprised that we were interested in this topic in general.
Fulani or like...
Fulani.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And also in the beginning we talked about Mauritania and...
Exactly.
Yeah, that something he was also surprised of. What I think is, you know, this man, what he shared with us in the interview, what he has experienced in Mauritania, the reasons why he had to leave his country,
yeah.
He has gone through that much.
Yeah.
And now, you know, he's sitting face to face with you and just looking like a normal guy.
Yeah.
Like a guy that is nice to have a chat with.
Yeah.
This made me think of, it's so weird. You never, you know, you can only, you can never watch into a person's head.
Yeah.
You know, you know, never know what's inside. You just see a normal person, seeing his clothing, his I don't know, way of behavior.
Is that a German saying?
What?
Look into someone's head?
Yeah, isn't it?
No. Wait, I like it.
So what do we say in English? What do you say in Norwegian then?
In Norwegian, I don't know. But in English, you can never be in someone's shoes.
But that's something else.
You can never be in someone's head. No, it's okay. I liked it.
You know, this idea of walking into in somebody's shoes is maybe something else. It's just like... Anyway.
No, it's like, in his hat. I've never heard that before.
Okay.
As we were speaking with Yero, he was talking about the situation that's happening in Mauritania. He talked about how he got to the Netherlands mm-hmm. through an organization that he found in Senegal. He talked about the treatments of black people in Mauritania and the slave trade. And he also talked a lot about his Fulani identity. And this is the point that we started to focus more and more on throughout the interview. I asked him that on, he's very active on Facebook, and he posts videos where he speaks in Fulani.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he often engages in Fulani topics. And under the comments of those videos is a lot of people who are Fulani commenting.
Supporting him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Participating in the discussion of what he's saying. And I told him I couldn't really understand what's being said in the videos, but what are you really talking about in those videos? And he answered this.
Yeah, I talk about the caste problems sometimes, because we have caste problems, you know. Mm-hmm. I told you about this. Problem
within the Pearl community. Sometimes, when you talk about a subject, it's important to speak the language of the person so that he can understand. Because when you put the more intellectual French speech, not everybody understands. The people who need the message most don't understand any other language, so that's why. From Facebook, the videos are downloaded and then it ends up on WhatsApp. For example, you make a video now. For example, someone called me. He saw my video from 2016 in 2020.
So yeah, that's actually very interesting what he said, because he's saying that not everybody is capable of understanding French. And therefore, he's talking to the people in their own language.
Yeah.
And he also said, like, he's talking about social topics, political topics, and hip-hop topics. So actually a very diverse field of possible topics that he talks.
Exactly. So he mentions different topics. It's basically he wants to reach the Fulani community. So he knows if he speaks that language, he will reach more people.
Yeah, my next question to Yero was that in Europe, if he's looking to a Fulani community, or is the origin not important to him? And that's what he says.
I found Fulani from Sierra Leone online, and I never thought we were so close. It's so clear. It's the same thing, closer than the Fulani in Guinea. With the Fulani of Sierra Leone, it's even closer than ones from Guinea. Guinea is closer to Mauritania, and Sierra Leone is far away, but we in Sierra Leone get along more normally. And there are Fulani schools, a foundation, and they do cultural activities. So I'm with Fulani from Sierra Leone, Burkina, Guinea, Senegal, Mauritania.
He mentioned that he... in another part that he had met a Sierra Leonean from YouTube. He met them online. And he is active with different types of Fulani people, not necessarily the Mauritanian, as mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And he also is with Dutch people here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily only Fulani.
And now the most important question is, if you have a Fulani person from Mauritania and you got a Fulani person from Guinea or Nigeria or Niger or Sudan, can they communicate with each other? That's what we asked him as well.
Exactly.
When you live with people for centuries, they are bound to be influenced by other groups. And the influences, for example, are the Poles in Nigeria live with the Hausa and the Yoruba. And in Mauritania, they live with the Berbers, with the Wolof, with the Soninke. The others are in Guinea with the Malinke, with the Susu. You see, it's like that everywhere in Africa. In Cameroon, you also have Peul, but they are inevitably changes. But you can always understand other Peul if you are very good at your mother tongue. With the Sierra Leoneans, for example, zero effort. It's crazy. And with the Fulani in Mauritania and Senegal, it's the same thing. In Mali, you have Messina, Fouta Djallon. In Guinea, we can understand each other. In Niger, it will be a little bit more complicated. But I know Fulani people from Niger, and we can understand each other. But it's a little more complicated.
I thought it was interesting and very surprising that he could understand different Fulani people from other countries, because I assumed that it would be very hard to understand each other since they live in so many different countries.
Yeah.
And he did mention that, of course, there are dialect differences and they are influences of their neighboring ethnicities. So they probably have loan words from other ethnic groups such as Wolof or
Arab.
Malinke,
yeah.
Arab.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was really surprising to me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that was it from Yero's side for now. We have a transcribed version of the whole interview in our blog. So dear listeners, if you're interested in reading more from Yero and about Yero, you can just check out our blog. Idil, let me ask you, what do you think about interviews as a research method?
I think it's, for me, one of the best ways to find information.
How so? Why that?
Because you get the answers to the questions there and then. You might find that you might have missed something or you learn a lot of new information, such as the information with the languages. I was really surprised about that.
Mm-hmm.
You can get more personal stories. You can get other aspects than, for example, a quantitative research method, such
mm-hmm,
as
mm-hmm.
a survey. So I found this method that we used very helpful to get a lot of new information and even lead us in our research.
I absolutely share your opinion, but I do think there are also some risks related to conducting interviews.
Such as?
Such as, first of all, it's all about the atmosphere, about
yeah.
the environment. About the person feeling comfortable, for instance.
Yeah.
And since we are following a decolonized approach in our interviews and in our scientific work in general, we as a group, we should also keep in mind that there's a specific hierarchy, not necessarily in the interview with Yero, but just in general. If we think about going to our internships, going to African countries, conducting interviews on site, there's always a hierarchy that we have to consider.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
But that's it for now. Let's continue with the next part, which is a song of the Senegalese Fulani singer Omar Ka, who is now living in the Netherlands.
Yeah. He often sings in Fulani, or only sings in Fulani, as it is his native tongue.
Mm.
He's not really political, which
mm-hmm.
is interesting compared to the Mauritanian artist.
Yeah, sure.
And this we will discuss in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
What we just heard was Jolof by Abu and Omar Ka on the vocals.
Very relaxing song, wasn't it?
Very relaxing.
Really appreciated this one.
Yeah, I really like it.
So how do we proceed, Ito? What's next in
Let's
our podcast?
Talk about elements of Fulani identity.
Okay.
What can you say about that, Neil?
Well, I think there are so many. But based on our research, I would say that, you know, it's maybe hard to define all of them, but we can at least make some things that seemed to us as elements of Fulani identity. There is, for instance, this hat called
Hula.
Yeah, the Hula hat. And you can find many pictures of that hat. It's part of the traditional clothing. And also Yero has used it for some of his songs.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And it's very identifiable. So then you got the clothing for men, the clothing for women. You know, I don't want to talk about the clothing too much, but it's just like the fact that Fulani people have a distinctive clothing, which used to be part of their history and now is certainly an element of identification.
Yeah.
Is crucial.
And there's other factors such as Islam, right?
Yeah, Islam. I mean, we have already talked about that. Islam, like Sunni Maliki Islam. I'm not sure about the importance, actually, of it nowadays, because if you consider Europe, for instance, you got many Muslims here.
Yeah.
I am not really sure if a Fulani person might feel connected with an Arab person only through religion.
Yeah.
So I do think, like, back then in history, Fulani were, or Fulani are still really proud of their history, also of their history of Islam and their contributions and their jihadi movements and states that were based on the principle of Islam.
Yeah.
That does not necessarily mean that Fulani nowadays are more religious than other persons.
Yeah.
So I would say that Islam plays in an environment like in Europe, for instance, where you got a lot of Muslims, a lesser role than, for instance, the clothing, or maybe the history in general, or also pulaku,
yeah,
that I've mentioned in the beginning. Like, pulaku is the code of behavior, so to say.
Their Fulaniness, they're expressing their Fulaniness.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's actually very interesting. I mean, there are so many. I'm not really sure if pulaku is like a fixed system that is the same for every Fulani person, but I do think that it's kind of a variety of certain ways of behavior that are kind of recommendable, let's say. So, for instance, you got within the pulaku, you got munyal, the patience, you got hakilo, the wisdom, you got semtende, the modesty and respect, and you got sagata, courage and hard work. So those are four main principles of the pulaku. And it's also about hospitality, for instance. Yeah. So Fulani are considered as good hosts. There's so much, actually, to consider. And the fact that it exists, that they have their own code of behavior, is very crucial.
Yeah.
Because that's not the case for everybody.
No.
If we talk about peoples in Africa and also in Europe, it's not necessarily the case that they have, like, a code of behavior.
Exactly. It's the first time I'm hearing of it.
Yeah.
Very interesting. A group that has a code of behavior.
So, Idil, before we finish this first podcast episode, I'd like to ask you something, because you have busied yourself with the factor of blackness of Fulani people. I mean, of course, if you think about people from Central and West Africa, the majority might probably be black.
Yeah.
But what is so special about this fact?
Yeah, through the social media analysis that we speak about the next episode and the interview, I have identified that blackness is a very important factor for Mauritanian artists in their music and in whatever they speak about. Actually, they have like songs like Yero Roy. They have songs called like promoting blackness, talking about blackness. And I realized that they do this more often than other Fulani artists because of the situation that's going on in Mauritania with the oppression of black people. So it's not only...
By whom?
By the Arabs.
Okay.
Yeah, in Mauritania.
Yeah.
So in Senegal, for example, it's not really the case when it comes to being discriminated because of your race. Probably you can be discriminated because of being Fulani, but not really because of your race. So the artists who are not Fulani, are not the Mauritanian, tend to sing about other factors like just love or just other things that are not regarding blackness.
Yeah.
And I found that very interesting.
So you think that within this kind of common Fulani identity, there are still distinctive national affiliations?
Yes. I think where they reside affects them, most likely. So if you live in Mauritania and you are Fulani, you have a different life experience than someone that lives in Sierra Leone or Cameroon.
Yeah.
Because of the national context and the people that you're neighboring with. So I do believe that it does affect maybe your identity more, like if your blackness is always being discussed and being targeted, it will be something that's very, like, you are very aware of it and it will be very important to you compared to someone who lives in a black majority country where maybe you will be attacked for being Fulani. So that will just be something, the only thing you care about. It was a really interesting observation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can share that. I totally agree with that. Okay, that's it for the first episode.
Yes.
After 2 hours of recording. I'm just kidding. It's not that long. It's still long. Okay, so we're going to see you and you're going to hear us in the next episode of our podcast, which will deal with social media.
Yeah.
So now you listen to the outro music that we haven't found yet, but once you listen to it, you can be sure that we will have found it.
Yeah.
Take care, guys. See you.
See you.